I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. Next hour, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with a representative from Americans for Prosperity. This week, it will be Stone Clanton will be coming in talking about, they've got an event coming up this weekend. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are pretty energized by the idea of the runoff, the fine showing by Michael Cassidy against Michael Guest. And what this is really based around is some level of political activism. A couple of days ago, it was heading to the polls, but your work is not done. As I've explained, this is the beginning of a process. It's going to be a long travel. We have allowed our government to go too far afield, and it is going to take a lot of work to get it back. We could have bumped it back into shape from time to time over the last 50 years, but we decided to just ignore it. Cast a vote every 2, 4, or 6 years, and then just think we could set it and forget it. But now it's going to take a little bit of work. Americans for Prosperity actually has a mechanism in place to help people learn political activism. So they'll be doing an event this weekend. We'll talk about that next hour with Stone Clanton. Some of my work apparently is done here at the station. I love this headline. You want to talk about clickbait for Mike Madison. American trust in government near historic lows. Pew finds. The study says, or the story says, Uncle Sam isn't a trustworthy dude. He was in 1964 when Americans gave the government he symbolizes a positive rating of 77%. Since then, public trust has fallen to a disturbing 20%, near historic lows, according to a Pew Research Center report released this week. Unfortunately, that low approval rating, I don't know why they say unfortunately. Who wrote this story? It's on MSN. I believe this might be a Washington. Yeah, it might be a Washington Post story. Unfortunately, that low approval rating reflects decades of distrust, the report said, and a sentiment that has changed very little since former President George W. Bush's second term in office. So the government, people trust the government less and less, yet people continue to give them more and more power. It's an interesting dichotomy. You're looking at the left right now, as we're about to talk about a little bit about this gun control, because it's trying to worm its way through Congress right now. You see a left who just a couple of short years ago told you that Donald Trump was a fascist who had taken over the country. He was a Nazi. And now they want to disarm the people? Does this make any logical sense to you? This is the same group of people that say that the police are out hunting young black men, yet Democrats want to disarm everybody and make sure that the police are the only ones that have guns. It makes no logical sense, but I guess in that 20% of people who trust government, that is largely Democrats. But I love it. I think that number is way too high. It's like looking at Biden's got record low approval ratings now at around 39%. I find that absolutely hard to believe that 39% of the people appreciate what he is doing. There's always a good 30% of Kool-Aid drinkers, 20% of Kool-Aid drinkers and able to see the truth. But anyway, this 20% of people who trust government will surely get whittled away, or those are just the people who refuse to acknowledge the truth. Today is the opening day. I guess tonight will be the opening day, opening production. They've got a full-on TV production team for the January 6th hearings. They've already teased it with some bombshells that they believe will take place during this production. You know, the best propaganda is always heavily produced and polished. It's got to look really legit. So they've, a former ABC producer is actually going to do this thing. So we'll be treated to that. I'm sure we'll have some sound bites from what goes on with the January 6th hearings. Much ado about absolutely nothing. But underneath that, gun control legislation is making its way through Congress. Justin Amash had tweeted in response, here's what the House Democrats tweeted out. They said, semi-automatic rifles are weapons of war. Refusing to act and save lives in this moment is an immoral abandonment of your constitutional duty. Justin Amash, the libertarian Republican congressman, he doesn't serve anymore. Justin Amash, the libertarian, said the Second Amendment specifically protects the right of the people to possess weapons of war. That's literally why it exists. Libertarians are so much stronger, even than conservatives, on gun rights. I know you find that hard to believe, but libertarians believe that you should pretty much be able to own a tank if you want to, and there's a lot of conservatives who, well, we can't have that. Along those routes, I found a headline last night. I'm going to rehash a quote of the day from 2 days ago. I don't typically do that. I try to keep fresh, original quotes of the day. But on Tuesday, I read this one. George Bernard Shaw said, all great truths begin as blasphemies. All great truths begin as blasphemies. And there is no greater blasphemy on conservative talk radio than to challenge, air quotes here in the studio, law enforcement. And I've spent 5 years telling you that the police do heroic work on a daily basis. There's a lot of great value to what police officers do. But they also abuse free citizens in this country by enforcing the endless laws written by politicians. This is why this show is, it doesn't matter if it's Donald Trump or the police or anybody, a corporation, or if they do something good, it's to be praised. If they do something bad, it's to be criticized. Most people decide there's no nuance, there's no gray areas. You're either all in with them or you're all against them. Doesn't matter which of those categories I listed. But I think all this reverence for law enforcement, if you stop and just think about that term for just a second, Americans have got record low trust in government. Yet the trust in the agents of government, the ones that enforce the will of this government, is barely tainted on the conservative side, and I've spent 5 years doing it. It is the great blasphemy for me to do that on conservative talk radio, to actually challenge a lot of the work that, air quotes here in the studio, law enforcement, a lot of the things that they do. And I think all this reverence for just law enforcement and carrying water for them, it doesn't matter what happens. We always look for a way to absolve law enforcement of any responsibility for anything. They're always the good guys in a lot of people's minds. And I'll say it again, a lot of cops I really do like, and a lot of them do great work. But as an institution, they have a dark side as well. So-called freedom-loving conservatives in this country have built the police state, unwittingly, I guess is a better way to put it. Actually, conservatives have cheered for the police state that we have created. I'm getting to a headline, bear with me. You've cheered for the militarization of the police because you think you're a law-abiding citizen. And I've warned you over and over, well, what happens if the laws change? And they did. It's not that long ago, is it, that politicians ordered that churches shut down. You know who enforced that? Law enforcement. Politicians ordered businesses to be closed or to be capped at a certain occupancy. You know who enforced that? Law enforcement. Some politicians demanded, some health bureaucrats demanded that you wear a mask if you go into certain places. You know who made sure you submitted to that? Law enforcement. I've seen parents challenge school boards around the country. And you know what happens if you get too uppity in front of a school board meeting? Law enforcement comes and takes you out. There's places where politicians have said that it's no good for a farmer to sell raw milk to his neighbors who willingly want to buy it. You know what happens to them? Law enforcement goes in and trashes the place. They will SWAT raid somebody selling milk in this country. A politician said, in order to fight the war on drugs, no American should be allowed to carry a bunch of cash around. And if we find that you're carrying a bunch of cash around, the cops will come and take that money from you. Law enforcement will enforce these political edicts. Now, most people will not heed these warnings until it's too late because you've already decided your identity is on this because you believe you are a, air quotes here in the studio, law-abiding citizen, that all of the work that the cops do is always great because it always targets the bad guys. But I believe you may understand what I'm talking about soon if this next story is any indication. This was a story I ran across on WLOX yesterday. Mississippi sheriffs say they're ready to enforce any gun safety laws that come to pass. Mississippi sheriffs say they're ready to enforce any gun safety laws that come to pass. And this is where I tell you, conservatives, you will heed my words. It may be far too late by the time you understand what I was talking about on this radio show for 5 years, which is if you allow people to be stripped of their rights because it's a right that you don't want, then you are setting the stage to be stripped of the rights that you do want at a future time. And I would imagine that the vast majority of law enforcement, if something is codified into law in this country, the cops just say, I was just doing my job. Pulled you over because you're not wearing a seatbelt. You weren't any harm to anybody else. You weren't driving recklessly. I just noticed that you'd made a personal choice not to put on a seatbelt. So a politician told me I needed to pull you over and give you a $150 fine. And if you don't pay that fine, we're going to come get you again, put you in a cage. Mississippi sheriffs say they're ready to enforce any gun safety laws that come to pass. Who do you think is enforcing some of these cities, Chicago, any of these cities that have harsh gun control measures right now? Of course, they don't work. We know that, right? Who do you think is enforcing these harsh gun control laws in these areas that have them? The police. But see, we've cheered for those things because we think, well, they're just enforcing. That's a bunch of thugs. They're out there fighting the gangs and the thugs out in the streets. But it has been the police state that was created, particularly in these blue areas that have had gun control laws that don't work. Obviously, we know they don't work, but it's not stopped the police from arresting them. We had actually a shooting. What was the guy's name? Juan Castillo. Wolanda Castillo, something like that. A guy was actually carrying a gun. He had a permit for a gun, and he explained to the police that he had this gun in his car, and the cops overreacted, and they shot him and killed him. Now watch conservatives who champion the Second Amendment, supposedly, watch this gun owner be killed alive on camera, and they took the side of the police in that case. So Mississippi sheriffs say they're ready to enforce any gun safety laws that come to pass. You might want to get on the phone with your sheriff right now. Sheriffs have tremendous power. If you want to be free in this country, a good sheriff is a big part of that. I believe the sheriff's authority in their district is unopposed. They pretty much call the shots. And I have seen time after time in conservative areas, people elect sheriffs because they believe in this law and order type thing. He's a fine Christian man, but some of these sheriffs are just set to enforce laws. If a law comes down, they will enforce it. And what will happen very soon if these Mississippi sheriffs are being honest about saying they will enforce these gun safety laws, that means your 19-year-old son, your 20-year-old daughter, who may have purchased a gun perfectly legally one day and then it becomes illegal for them to own it the second day, Mississippi sheriffs are saying that second day, when the new law passes, when a bunch of politicians get together and say that this is no good anymore, we've outlawed this, that means that these sheriffs are ready to enforce and arrest that 19 or 20-year-old who's got a weapon that they were perfectly able to own the day before. Yeah, people need to be on phone with their sheriffs. They need to explain to them that this is a no-go. Not going to happen. I had heard on Dark Press, too, just talking about police, and I've had this note for a couple of days. You know, Therese April does our news breaks here, and she was talking about some kind of a crime summit. They're looking to try to solve crimes in Jackson. I went to her website, Dark Horse Press Now, and I was looking at it. It says, if Jackson hires 100 new police officers, murders will be reduced by 6 to 10. The report also shows how Mississippi and Jackson, the state and the city with the highest homicide rates in the country, could save precious lives. It's estimated that 100 new police officers on the street could prevent between 6 and 10 homicides per year. 100 police officers on the street. And I didn't do the math to try to figure out exactly what that is, but it's in the millions of dollars to save 6 to 10 lives in a city that has got over 150 homicides in a year. Maybe it's not. Maybe cops on the street is not really the problem. Maybe it's the culture. Maybe it's the fatherlessness. Maybe it's the failing schools or a system designed to trap people in poverty and ignorance. I'm not sure. It doesn't sound like police on the streets is what the key is to saving lives. I was just stunned by that statistic. It takes 100 police officers to save 6 to 10 lives a year. Now, look, I give the police a pass on that. So one person wants to shoot another person. Cops can't be Johnny on the spot all the time. But I was a little surprised that that was the study. Anyway, you watch as this gun control comes down. All the people who believe that you're safe, that would never happen here. They'd never come take my guns. I've supported law enforcement all my life. How's that support of FBI working out for you now? It's funny. You know, libertarians have been pointing to the FBI for years and years and years and years. I can't decide if it's good or depressing to see a lot of conservatives start to understand the corruption at the top of the FBI. It took Donald Trump to do it, yet the FBI has been doing things like that for decades, and nobody was paying attention. So anyway, keep your eye on this. This gun control stuff, you better have a serious conversation with your county sheriff. So that he understands that, you know, you want to maintain your constitutional rights regardless of what the nut jobs in Washington, D.C. do. We'll be right back. I heard a conversation on WIAB outside of my show the other day that I wanted to take just a minute to address. I got a short segment here. I'm going to jump into it real quick. I was listening to Kim Wade's show the other day, and apparently somebody called. I didn't actually hear the caller, but there was some talk about this caller basically saying, well, both of these parties are the same. This was in light of the Michael Cassidy. I think this might have been Election Day. And there was some talk about, you know, well, if you send up a good Republican, or, you know, it was something about the two-party system. And Kim has his point of view on that, is that you play within the game that's set in front of us right now, which is the Republican versus Democrat. I think I was besmirched on the show as he said, you libertarians, you fly your flag like a gay pride parade, like a gay pride flag. I thought that was interesting. I mean, the libertarian flag, you know, there's a lot of people out there with the don't tread on me, the Gadsden flag. That's really kind of the libertarian thing, except that the difference between libertarians and conservatives is libertarians actually believe that. They believe in true freedom. But notwithstanding, it was kind of interesting to think about the fact that should we just accept this two-party system and just play within that game, not try to have other parties, to try to find an alternative to this two-party system, or do we just play within the sandbox of what the Republicans and the Democrats control? And one of the things that kind of brought to mind was, real quick in your brain right now, name 5 Republicans you really have liked over your lifetime. Maybe you can come up with 5. How about 10? Can you come up with, if you're one of the people, and this is pretty much the WIAB audience, near as I can tell, if you're truly a kind of a freedom lover, you're fed up with this government, you think it spends too much, you think it's too big, you're sick of it meddling in your lives, you're smart enough to understand that it's the government that created this inflation over decades, and particularly the last few years. So name those freedom fighters within the Republican Party. Is it Lindsey Graham? No, probably not. John McCain, Mitt Romney, a couple of your last people, and people will say Trump. That'll be the number one. Well, I really like Trump. Okay, there's one. But over the last 20, 30, 40 years that you have been voting in elections, I bet you I couldn't get people to name 10 Republicans they really love. If it takes 40 years to uncover 10 Republicans, and I'm not talking about just in the state here, I don't know a whole lot of people that have been very satisfied with much of anybody, not in our audience. Not satisfied with Roger Wicker or Thad Cochran, Greg Harper, Michael Guest. So the idea is that, well, maybe if we just vote really hard. And I love the fact that Michael Guest was challenged in this primary, and it looks like, I guess, they're headed to a runoff. I love that. I've been preaching for 5 years. The primaries are your biggest tool, because once you get to the general, you will hold your nose and vote for another vanilla Republican. So the primaries is where you make the difference. I'm bolstered by what's happened 2 days ago, and I think it validates what I've been saying for 5 years. I told people to take a dive on Cindy Hyde-Smith. Should have let Mike Espy take the office for 2 years and then go out and search for a real freedom-fighting Senate candidate, and you could have put him in 2 years later. Trump already had the majority in the Senate at the time that special election was taking place. It didn't even matter if Mississippi Senate Republican. I know people don't want to hold their nose and let a Democrat like Mike Espy get into office. I understand that. There's some danger in that plan, but you might have actually gotten a freedom-fighting senator from Mississippi, somebody you could be proud of. But I don't know. You know, this also kind of ignores the fact, you know, other countries have multiple political parties. Now, I'm sure there are countries that have what we have here, which is a monopoly by two. I guess they've got the Tories and Labour over in England. So I'm sure there are always kind of more prominent parties that, you know, they end up serving the donor class. So the donor class floods them with money, and then they use that money to buy off a bunch of voters. You know, this is not unusual. But I got to tell you, if you've been voting for 20, 30, 40 years, and you can't name 10 Republicans that actually turned out to be what you expected them to be, then maybe we should rethink our strategy here. Now, I'm going to be very interested to see. The Libertarian Party has been taken over by the Ron Paul wing of the party, lock, stock, and barrel. Just about every office at the Libertarian Party is now run by people who supported Ron Paul, a real freedom fighter. He would be on my incredibly short list of Republicans that I could name that I would be proud to say I supported. And so it's going to be interesting to see. But it's just something for all of us to think about. Now, they're going to get you in that, oh, you're throwing away your vote stuff, because that's how they capture you. And to be honest with you, it's a tad bit true. You know, people, it has to be a pretty big movement. It's not going to be an easy lift. But, you know, if it takes a couple of election cycles to start bringing some other parties in, is that not preferable to the last 30, 40, 50, 60 years you've been swinging away at trying to elect people that you could be proud of, and you can't find 10 of them over 50 years? Maybe that is the definition of insanity. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. The news out now about the Saudi Arabians basically buying our golfers. Isn't this an interesting world? You're paying record high prices at the pumps. Records. It's destroying people's financial picture at the bottom rungs of the ladder. It's really very, very sad to me. As I said, I saw a guy running across the highway the other day with a gas can, and I just said, I think we're going to see a lot of these. Drive carefully. Keep your eyes open. Don't text while you drive, because there's going to be people running around with gas cans trying to get from place to place. Paying record high gas prices. They're going to use some of this fat cash that they're getting from the oil right now, because the powers that be have cut Russia off the world stage for oil. And they're using that cash to buy our golfers. Yeah, I mean, the money is just sick. When you ever pay attention to the money that the Saudi Arabians, the Qataris, the Kuwaitis, the money that these people spend, it is like monopoly money to these people. And they're really not good people. Now, I will call your attention to the fact that while some people may be sick of this, I mean, not to mention, I guess I should just throw this in there. They're the ones that were implicated in funding, planning, helping facilitate the 9/11 attacks. But I guess we're past that now. We really never talked about it. Those pages were classified all during the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and then became declassified during the Trump administration. Yet Trump's reaction to finding out that the Saudis were responsible for 9/11, what was Trump's reaction? He went over and did the sword dance with the Saudi government. And when Congress even voted to get us out of participating in this genocide on the people of Yemen, Donald Trump vetoed it so that we would keep helping the Saudis bomb and kill innocent people in Yemen. Saudi Arabians have got quite the little gig working there. They talk on the news about, well, we can't believe our golfers are going over there because there's still this unsolved mystery of the Khashoggi murder. That's just one of the millions of murders carried out at the behest of the Saudi government. Now, I know this money is just stupid. $400, $500 million for a golfer to join this Saudi tour. I would imagine people are not going to be happy about this. You know, at some point, guys, I understand. I really can't judge anybody. Do what you want to do when it comes to financial decisions. And I got someone dangles a $400 million contract in front of me. I guess I better not judge until that happens. No offers are forthcoming, I would imagine. But, you know, at some point, you should just have enough money to be really, really comfortable and enjoy your life. You play golf for a living, for God's sakes. Do you really need to cash in for a few $100 million to be banned from the PGA and go over and play for the Saudis and basically dance for them? These oligarchs, it's really quite amazing. Our relationship with Saudi Arabia is quite amazing. But, of course, there is a reason for that. I'm going to get into a little bit of financial news here. Mortgage rates, the number of people applying for mortgages and refis, dropped to its lowest rate in 22 years. And the reason is home affordability is just, it's disappearing in this country. There were some pretty shocking statistics, but when did this trend really start? When were homes more affordable, and when did they start really rising further and further, affecting the American dream here? The mortgage rates just over the past year have gone from, it would take you 24.5% of your income to pay a mortgage, so one quarter of your income was dedicated to a mortgage, to now it is at 37.8%. So think about that. From to buy a house now, you've gone from a year ago from a quarter of your household income being needed to pay a mortgage to over a third. And that's at the same time that costs are rising on everything else. Your electric bill is also higher. Your food is higher. And God knows your gasoline is higher. So something has got to give, and it's got to give soon in the housing market. Home affordability right now is the lowest on record. Now, what was very interesting, and I will do another bad radio faux pas in trying to explain a chart through words, but there is a chart that shows home affordability in the United States. It is now the lowest on record. The chart shows that the highest home affordability, meaning how it was the easiest to get into a home and achieve the American dream, own your piece of property there, the highest home affordability was in, anyone, 1971. And has been dropping steadily ever since. In 1971, the average income was about 37% of the price of a home, meaning that you would go out, if you earned $30,000 a year, you were buying a home for about, $89,000, something like that. It took about 3 years of your income to pay for a house. This is notwithstanding interest and all the rest of the stuff. But your average income was about 37% the price of a house. Now, it's about 17%. So you will need to pay almost six times your household income to buy a house instead of three. Less than three, actually. We're going from less than three to over six. And this, as I said, home affordability was doing great in 1971. Does anybody else remember? This is a date that comes up on this show quite often. Anybody else remember what took place in 1971? This is when the Republican president, Richard Nixon, took us off of, anyone? The gold standard. See, when you have a sound money in a country, where the money is backed by something, where there are some handcuffs put on the politicians, that they cannot just print up endless amounts of money because all of the money had to be backed by gold at the time. They had to acquire gold in order to print more money. Richard Nixon, the Republican president, took us off that gold standard. He told us it was temporary. And ever since then, home affordability has gone down, down, down. And now it is at the worst it's ever been. Something is going to give in the mortgage market. I don't know what it is. Maybe wages are going to just stunningly rise and houses are going to stay where they are. Or quite possibly, we're going to see a housing crisis that was very similar to 2008. So we're going to see. I wanted to get into this. Janet Yellen talking about inflation. This is your Treasury Secretary. She used to be the chairman of the Federal Reserve. She doesn't seem to get a lot of questions about her participation in the endless money printing that led to this inflation. But she's got, I want you to think about this. Somebody tweeted this out. The Fed has 400 plus economics PhDs and 150 research assistants on the payroll and access to the best real-time economic data before anybody else. And yet they came to horrifically wrong conclusions. You remember, this is Janet Yellen, that not that long ago told you this inflation was transitory. Well, she's got an update for you.
I said that inflation would be transitory. What I was not anticipating was a scenario in which we would end up contending with multiple variants of COVID that would be scrambling our economy and global supply chains. And I was not...
And it is not the variants of COVID that have scrambled anything. It is the policy reaction to COVID. The lockdowns, the shutdowns, the hysteria that surrounded it has nothing to do with this virus, particularly the variants, which are even more survivable than the alpha variant. Has nothing to do with those things. This is Janet Yellen doing what these people do. This is the, we never could have seen this coming. Now, she knows. She knows. The people in Congress know. They know it's the money printing. The problem is the Congress won't tell you that because Congress, Republicans and Democrats, again, I go back to it. You want to stick with these two parties? You want to play in the sandbox they've created for you? Knock yourselves out. How's that going for you? Republicans and Democrats love the money printing. Republicans to use it on the warfare state, Democrats to use it on the welfare state. And Janet Yellen knows the money printing is what caused inflation, but she'll tell you, oh, we were doing great. Nobody could have seen this coming.
Envisioning impacts on food and energy prices we've seen from Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Yep.
So as Chair Powell indicated himself, both of us probably could have used a better term than transitory. I do expect inflation to remain high, although I very much hope that it will be coming down now.
Oh, so she hopes. She expects inflation to stay high, but she hopes. She hopes. She knows inflation can't come down because they're still printing money, up to and including today. And interest rates are still ridiculously low. The interest rates you have right now are essentially negative real interest rates. Negative real interest rates. You know what that creates? Inflation. And she knows it. Congress knows it. They'll never get to the honesty of this stuff. Man, these people have been having their way with us, and we're finally feeling it. I don't like it. I don't like inflation. I've got a car. I got to fill up with gas. I eat. Usually, I'm on my third day of a fast, so I've saved a fortune over the last 3 days of not eating any food. But I pay these prices, too. But I'll tell you, if we could educate people on exactly why this is happening, we might actually see some change in this country for the first time ever in my lifetime. Be right back.
At first I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
You know, we have not talked much about the vaccine lately, air quotes in the studio around vaccine, but this program continues to wreak havoc on people, the long-term effects. The reason that I was hesitant about this shot, first of all, because I do a lot to keep my health in check, I am currently, as we speak, doing a three-day fast, which I explained on my health show yesterday, actually renews the entire immune system. 3 days fast. You get a brand new immune system. I'm just a few hours away from a shiny new immune system. So I do those things 365 days a year to boost my immune system. So I didn't think I needed the shot. And the other problem was there was no long-term safety testing of this thing. And so we are still seeing headlines, even though it has not been mainstream news recently, but a story came across today that I've got to cover. I was just disinvited, uninvited. I got an invitation to a family member's wedding next month because I have not had the shot. They required a vaccine card to attend this thing. They said it was interesting. They said, well, there's going to be some immunocompromised people there. That's sad if that's the case. But when did it become that the healthy people have to lock down so the immunocompromised people can go about their business as they see fit? We need to keep the healthy people away from the immunocompromised people. This seems to be on its head. Usually if you have a severe health problem where you have a concern, maybe you're the one that needs to stay home and fix your health. Listen to my show from 10 to 11 o'clock. But it was also interesting, and I'm not going to engage this person. I love the person who's getting married. I'm sorry that this is the way it's turned out, but that is what it is. I'm sure they think I'm a horrific, horrible person who hates other people, basically just a serial killer out there without this shot. I don't really want to debate them on this. They are fully into the idea that this thing is necessary for everybody to have. But I think it's interesting. If you've got immunocompromised people at an event, why stop at the COVID vaccine? Do you not demand a full vaccination record to make sure that I don't have chicken pox, tuberculosis, shingles? I mean, there's a whole lot of communicable diseases out there, a whole lot of viruses that somebody could have to say that an immunocompromised person can walk around and feel great as long as everybody doesn't have COVID, but you can have a whole host of other diseases that can destroy the health of an immunocompromised person. So it's kind of odd to me that that was the only requirement. It kind of seems like, you know, I should be tested for TB before I head into a place with immunocompromised people. COVID's not the only thing that can affect them. Anyway, quite insane stuff. Here's part of the reason that I have not received the vaccine. Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm jumping to a conclusion. I want you to listen to this headline on the Daily Mail in the UK. This came out June 8th of 2022, yesterday. Here's what they're wondering about. Daily Mail. Healthy young people are dying suddenly and unexpectedly from a mysterious syndrome as doctors seek answers through a new national register. People aged under the age of 40 being urged to go get their hearts checked. People aged under 40 are being urged to have their hearts checked because they may be at risk of sudden adult death syndrome. The syndrome, known as SADS, has been fatal for all kinds of people, regardless of whether they maintain a fit and healthy lifestyle. SAD is an umbrella term described to describe unexpected deaths in young people, the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, most commonly occurring in people under 40 years of age. The term is used when a postmortem cannot find an obvious case of death. And it goes through an incredibly sad story of a 31-year-old woman who died in her sleep while living with two friends in Dublin. I'm going through the story here. And this is, it's just counting the stories. So suddenly, now I will say, I looked this up because I was so amazed at this headline. And this diagnosis of SADS, sudden adult death syndrome, that I wanted to find out if this is something they'd just come up with. Well, this has been around, I believe I tracked it back to about 2006. So this condition, which could be used to just describe for years and years when they couldn't figure out exactly what caused somebody's death, maybe it's been vaccines all along. These are not the first vaccines to have adverse health events. VAERS is littered with problems with all vaccines through all of time that they've been put out there. But apparently the numbers of healthy young people dying suddenly and unexpectedly is rising enough for physicians to want to try to find a reason for it. And there is not a place in this article that mentions the fact that this SADS epidemic, sudden adult death syndrome, is following right on the heels of mass vaccinations with an experimental gene therapy. It allows you to see people have had the cardiac arrest and no cause was found on the back end. And so they are just scratching their heads. Nowhere in this story. For family and friends of victims, SADS is a very hard entity to grasp because it's a diagnosis of nothing. Best advice would be, if you yourself have had first-degree relative, a parent, sibling, child who's had an unexplained death, it's extremely recommended you see a cardiologist. Yeah. Well, I would imagine for all of your friends, this is not a genetic thing. Suddenly, all of a sudden, these young adults are dying because suddenly there was an outbreak and something affecting people with certain genetics? No. Those people, those family lines of the same genetics have been around for a long time, but something has happened in the past year or so that's caused a lot of them to die. It's not the genetics, but I would imagine it is the agreement among families that we'll all go dutifully get this shot. This is incredibly sad, I will say that. But there's a whole article about young adults dropping dead and not a single mention of a mass experiment with the gene therapy with the known side effects of heart problems. That's the world we live in right now. That's why I didn't get the shot.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. It's Thursday. Every Thursday from 10 to 11 o'clock, we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with somebody from Americans for Prosperity. And today we've got Stone Clanton in here. Stone, you've been in before one time, right?
I have. I enjoyed it.
And your position with Americans for Prosperity?
Is Grassroots Engagement Director. So I'm the grassroots quote-unquote expert is what sometimes we say, but
you are now.
Yeah, I guess so. And I'm just here to help the average patriot that wants to get involved, doesn't know how to get involved, to help get them involved and make some changes.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about an event that y'all are about to put on that is about this. See, I think this is a kind of interesting timing. I think y'all have got an opportunity to kind of, there's a an agitation, a dissatisfaction out there, you know, whether it's COVID, mm-hmm. it's school board stuff, it's politics. Mm-hmm. We just saw, you know, Michael Guest challenged by someone kind of out of the blue and the pretty shocking result that they're headed to a runoff. Now, people are energized politically and it's going to continue to get probably more intense with the people are feeling the inflation that some people are mad that we're sending tens of billions of dollars to Ukraine just out of the blue. So now you've got a chance to kind of harness these people, and what AFP does some is train people on how to take that and use strategies to actually make things change. I mean, that's your whole thing, is to go up to the state legislature here as a Mississippi chapter and get a good policy passed. So it's probably a good time for y'all to be doing this, to kind of harness this energy and get people to direct it in an effective way. It's pretty easy for all of us to flail around, pretty easy to host a radio show for 2 hours where I just complain. But if you actually want to change things, you got to kind of know the system and know how to do it.
Yeah, and I think that is the key thing. A lot of people are angry, and it's so understandable why. I mean,
yeah.
You look at gas prices. There's, you know, the whole baby formula thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're sending money to different countries. Just, I mean, it's insane. It's pure insanity. But the thing is, you have to channel that anger sometimes to become more educated on why are these things happening.
Yes.
It isn't just because of a certain person, it's because of their policies,
right?
And we got to understand
decades of them.
Yes, decades of them.
Yeah.
And you have to understand the policies, why they're not working, and the actual solutions. It's one thing to sit there and complain about it, but when you got solutions and you understand the solutions, you have the correct knowledge, then you can make a difference.
Well, and that's the only way you force these people to do the right thing. It is driving me insane on the Republican side. Republican, I don't want to, you know, I'm no star as a talk show host, but I listen to conservative talk radio and they call this Bidenflation. Like he just came in and waved a magic wand and suddenly Joe Biden, this guy who's mentally handicapped, suddenly created worldwide inflation. Nobody has yet explained to me, if Joe Biden caused American inflation, how did he cause inflation in England and Germany and Japan?
Right.
I mean, inflation is everywhere, and it's because every country has adopted these same money printing policies. But conservative talk radio, for political points, to try to win elections, try to blame it on one guy. The lack of education, which just means that there's a lot of people right now who believe they can vote their way out of inflation. Not change any policies, but just change some of the players and some of the faces. That is not true. Republicans are as guilty for this inflation as the Democrats. We saw tons of money printing in 2020, Trump's last term, 20% of the money supply in the history of our country was created. Biden did it again. There's hand in hand. People have got to understand this, or we're never going to solve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And hey, like I said, this is a prime opportunity to come out. Like you mentioned, that event that we're going to be hosting this Saturday.
Yeah.
It's the Mississippi Policy Education Boot Camp, June 11th. Come out. It's going to be at our Ridgeland office, and I think we'll talk a little bit more on that in a minute so I can break it down and stuff.
Yeah. Are y'all having some of the trainers from National come in and do some stuff?
Yes. I think they are two of the best trainers that we have at National. It's our education training team, Seth Blankenship and Elizabeth Chatham. They're going to come down. And, of course, our state director, Starla Brown, will be there. Deputy Director Cade Yates, and then myself will be there, and we're going to break down this boot camp into five sections. It's going to be AFP's vision for a better Mississippi. Two is going to be the deregulation of health care. Three, economic freedom, which we all love.
Yes.
That's why AFP was truly started, educational freedom, and then working with anyone to do right. And then it'll start at 9 a.m. We'll have a small breakfast, coffee, donuts, probably some sausage biscuits and orange juice, a Chick-fil-A lunch, and then you will be certified at the end once you finish the class.
Yeah, and these classes, you know, I went through the grassroots training, GTA, was that what it was?
The GLA class.
GLA. So went through that, and it was very interesting because the people that were there were many people were involved in different issues. There are some of the moms who have been taking on the school boards. There are people who are actually entering politics and looking to run for offices and stuff. And this kind of training is good for kind of telling them exactly how to navigate the system and what to do, how to approach the system, because most of us don't know, and we really feel like it's pretty far out of reach. Whether it's our own state legislature, our own city council. You know, God knows we have no reach to get to Washington, D.C. and affect change on an individual level. So trying to get people to kind of figure out how to navigate this system for change is extremely important these days.
Yeah, and I think that's the neat thing about this class that's coming up. I know you mentioned the part where that first GLA class that you were at, and I was at also just as a student. That was kind of the basic – that's the base grassroots training.
Yeah.
This one is so specified to Mississippi – in Mississippi issues that are affecting everyday life, whether you are rich, poor, rural, urban, black, white, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
These are issues that are affecting everyone, especially in today's climate, in the entire country and in Mississippi.
Yeah.
This is supposedly, you know, a conservative state, but we have these terrible policies that are being continued.
Yeah,
you know?
We really do. I mean, it's been frustrating to watch. I admit I like the sexy National stuff and the players.
Yeah,
and,
you know, well, just, we all do.
Yeah, it's what I've always paid attention to. Since kind of getting involved with y'all, it's been interesting to watch our legislature and just to realize, I mean, I've always known that Mississippi was at the bottom of the rungs on just about everything. Everything that is good, we're last in. Most things that are bad, we're first in. It's almost a punchline at this point. We've made some progress on some things. But when you juxtapose that with this supermajority Republican legislature, Republican governor, and you look at these things, and it has been shocking to me the lack of creativity coming out of our state government. The fact that with this huge surplus they got in COVID money, that they couldn't take dramatic action in taxes, because these are supposedly Republicans who understand the more money you leave in a Mississippian's pocket, the better for the Mississippi economy. Yet they just couldn't quite get there. And I know it's a good step to reduce what they did.
And hopefully we can finish that off in the coming years.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully. But boy, so I've just been – the other part I've learned about from dealing with y'all and kind of getting more involved in what happens at the legislative letter, I've realized that I've never had the patience that you guys have. Where you actually put in the work year after year and chip and chip and chip and chip away at stuff. It is the way that things have to be done. I swear I don't have the patience for it. It is so aggravating
to
me.
It can be hard sometimes. It can be. And I've just grown over the years to just almost, you know, over the years, just there's a numbness sometimes. And other people can feel it sometimes. But, you know, you got to get work done.
Yeah.
You got to get work done, and you know, you work with anybody that will help you do that.
Well, it's a little bit like sports, you know, the great athletes. It's always interesting, you know, when you watch a championship game or something and one team loses and you realize they worked so hard all year. They train, they practice. I mean, they, you know, they make trades, they do all of these things, and then they just come short. And you will talk to some of the greatest athletes ever, and they go, we're coming back next year. And I just think, man, you just put a year's worth of work in there and did not accomplish your goal. But they say, well, we're just going to start again. We're going to start with training camp. We're going to recommit ourselves, and next year we're going to get it. And it is that thinking that really creates champions. It's just, I don't know, it's a long process to do something great.
Well, I think that's been the great thing about AFP, and that really opened my eyes. Even when I was an activist, I was like, man, I never come out of an AFP event feeling pessimistic.
Yeah.
I, at the very least, felt, you know, realistic about it, and I knew there was a problem, but almost a slight positivism. And you know, there's a way that we can make a difference, and we got to keep working on it, keep hacking at it.
Well, you know, there's a real possibility that this Michael Guest race may light a fire under some people in our legislature here, or suddenly what really was supposed to be a cakewalk for the incumbent guy to go up and do kind of traditional Republican things, it was supposed to be a cakewalk, and it was not. And I think we're going to see that at the school board level. I think we're going to see that at the legislative level. And so if people, instead of just waiting for election day to say, you know, I'm going to go in there and vote this guy out, if people start weighing in with these legislators during the course of a year or during the session and say, this is what I'm looking for from you, we might start seeing some change, because now these guys are like, oh my gosh, no seat is safe. I mean, I don't. Do you follow any of the, do you know anything in the Guest campaign, or do you follow that stuff at all?
No, I don't even live in that district anymore.
Yeah.
But I am watching it, though.
I'm fascinated by it because it's
interesting.
You're younger than I am. I've been around for long enough to watch Mississippi politics and there's like a conveyor belt of Republicans here. You know, we haven't had an open Senate seat for 40 years. They always, somebody retires, they appoint somebody else, and then they run as an incumbent, essentially, is what they do. It's just been acknowledged that they were going to put in whoever they wanted to put in, and Mississippians were going to vote for them in a general because they had an R behind their name, and people really weren't engaged. They have to be some level of shell-shocked that somebody with limited resources, almost no name recognition prior to the campaign, came in and at least forced this runoff, and there's a possibility that they may win. This has got to be a warning sign to people who just think they're going to coast through their political career with no accountability.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I think that all goes back to the anger, for the lack of a better word, that people are feeling right now, and some people are fearful, I mean, with the way the country's headed. So, I mean, it is interesting. It is interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of movement in politics, I think. You're going to see school board elections that are suddenly, really, people start paying attention to these things. I've never paid attention to a school board meeting. My kids went through Madison County Schools for 12 years, and I never had an issue with them. It was great. It's like Mayberry. I mean, they weren't learning to split the atom there. I wasn't, you know, under any impression that I was, you know, raising, you know, the geniuses by virtue of the schools. My kids are smart, but, you know, but they were safe. They were nice. The parents were really involved. Mm-hmm. Everything was just humming along. Well, then COVID comes around. The CRT stuff comes around. Suddenly parents are paying attention to these school boards too. And so a school board position, I'm sure, has just been a, you know, hey, do you want it? You can have it. You just go. You get 40 votes. You step in. Even those things are going to be contested. I mean, people are starting to get mobilized now.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been to, I know, one of those school board meetings, and I see just how many people even show up now.
Yeah.
It's insane. And yeah.
Well, they've got to do that. And, you know, this is kind of to the point of, you know, like an athlete, and you got to just commit yourself to the next year. My opinion is, and this is what I said after, I guess maybe yesterday, after this kind of surprise with the Guest re-election or primary, people have got to stay active. And I think we had opportunities over the past 50, 60 years to, when things started going a tad askew, we could have kind of bumped it back in place. And I compared it to our health. You know, if you gain an extra 5 or 10 pounds, then you decide, oh gosh, I'm getting a little out of shape, I'm going to eat a little bit better, I'm going to get a little bit of exercise, that 5 or 10 pounds is easy to lose. It's pretty easy to just course correct when you just, you know, basically just barely got off track. With our country, it seems like we gained 300 pounds. I mean, you know, we have to do drastic stuff now. It's not one of these things where we can just, you know, I'm going to walk twice a week, you know, I'm going to pay a little bit of attention to what I eat. No. This is like, you're almost on life support at this point. You've gained so much weight as a country. We've got to do radical things and constant attention. Playtime's over. We could have fixed things. You know, one of the things I battle with people, I'm not a huge Trump fan myself. I voted for him and then I got disappointed by him. But, you know, he had an opportunity in 2018 when they were raising interest rates to let them raise interest rates a little bit. It was starting to hurt the stock market and hurt the economy a little bit, as it would. But instead of taking a little bit of pain there and tamping down what this brewing inflation, he said, no, 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 print more money and take interest rates to negative. It's like we've missed opportunity after opportunity, whether it's here in Mississippi or nationally,
well,
to basically, you know, to course correct, you know, when something starts to go wrong. Instead, we don't course correct. We wait till it's way off course. And that's where we find ourselves now. And now it's time. It's playtime's over.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it's the apathetic piece that comes into that, because when people get comfortable,
absolutely,
what's the quote? You know, hard times create strong men create good times create weak men.
You're right.
And then weak men create hard times. And then it's just a cycle.
So that's where we are. We're at the very end of that statement right now, because now everybody feels it. It has finally come home to us. We've been able to ignore it for a long time. The inflation wasn't in our prices. It wasn't in our gas tanks. We just pretended that money printing didn't matter. We grumbled about it a little bit, didn't do anything. Well, now we find out it matters. You know, you're exactly right. We've got those hard times now.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see what we do. All right. We're talking to Stone Clanton, Americans for Prosperity. We'll talk more about his event and other things they've got going on around the state. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back and talking to Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. We were just talking about gas prices off air. This is a catastrophe, you know, and there is no sign. So many times something happens. I can't really think of an example now, but, you know, I'm an economics nerd. And so sometimes you can see, you might see bottlenecks at a port that you understand something's happening. You might see a refinery go down and understand that they need to fix a refinery and prices are going to spike in certain regions, but it comes back down. There is nothing that I can see on the horizon. The Federal Reserve talking about raising interest rates they're raising them nowhere close to what's going to actually hurt inflation. I mean, they are talking about getting to 2.5% or 3% with acknowledged inflation of 8%. That means real interest rates are still -5%. I mean, you have to take interest rates above the rate of inflation, the way they did in the 70s, to actually push inflation back down. You know, inflation was running at, you know, 18% to 20%. The Fed, or I think the official inflation rate back then was like 15% to 17% was the highest compared to today. They got way on top of it. It's almost like trying to push a beach ball down underwater. You got to get on top of it and push it down to get it back down. And the Fed's not talking about, even in their most aggressive scenario, they're talking about, well, we're going to do 2.5-point hikes. And then in September, we think we're going to pause. And then we may go back to I don't think they know if they raise interest rates, they're going to crush the economy because we have a debt-based economy. And it's interesting here in Mississippi. I brought this up with Forrest when he was with you guys. You know, Mississippi still does a lot of bond issues. They borrow a lot of money. I mean, I've talked about it with AFP over the last year, and that even when they've got a lot of money, they're still passing bonds. I mean, Mississippi still carries debt. What happens to the state of Mississippi if suddenly Mississippi wants to raise money or do a bond issue and they can't do it through a municipal bond at 3.5%? They have to, you know, they have to pay 7% on the money Mississippi borrows. I mean, you know, this is a long-term problem with nobody posing any solutions. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
I've heard nothing proposed from the people in policy levels that will at all affect what we're seeing right now.
Yeah. No, it's scary, and I wanted to go ahead and bring this up since we're talking about the gas issue right now. We're also, Nationals is doing this thing called the True Cost of Washington Tour. It's where people are paying more and getting less.
Yeah.
And wasteful government spending is increasing inflation. It's like a 40-year high right now, more than it's ever been. And it's the red tape. It's limiting affordable energy and innovation, driving up gas prices. So on June 28th, us and a national were taken or staking out at Vance Cox's gas station. Vance Cox, he's a fellow lover of liberty, good freedom fighter, from the Forest area. So we're going to camp out of his gas station and lower folks' gas prices down to what it was on January 20th of 2021.
Do you know what that was?
Oh, yeah, I know.
What was it?
I don't even know what it was then.
I mean, it has to be in the twos.
Yeah, yeah. Or, oh, yeah. Or at least, yeah.
Could it be high ones? I mean, yeah.
Probably in the twos. It's going to be stark. I don't know right off the top of my head, but it's insane. We're going to do that, and we're going to show people that we understand how this is affecting everyday life. It doesn't matter where you fall on the political spectrum.
Yeah.
This is everyday people. This is my mom. This is my grandma. This is my pastor. This is you. This is anybody working right down the street. And we're going to show them that we understand where how this is hurting them and how we are listening to them and taking the flight to Washington over this inflation.
And that's what it's about. I mean, I'm so thrilled to hear that y'all are basically doing education-type stuff. You know, it's one thing to go out and campaign for a certain person. Even our politicians, they do not educate people enough because they can't be honest. You know, Republicans who want to spend big on the warfare state or on pharmaceutical stuff or whatever, they can't be honest that the money printing is causing this. We need somebody to go out there and educate the people. I think Trump missed a big opportunity during his term. He should have done some fireside chats. I mean, he should have just said, look, I mean, he was outside the system. He didn't have any blame for it. He's not like a senator that rose up and became president. You know, he wasn't even a governor. He came up from outside the political system. He could have sat people down and gone, look, man, I've been telling you for years, this has been a train wreck. And here's how it's a train wreck. Now, it's going to be a little painful during my term, but we're going to start to correct some of these things. I really think he had a golden opportunity to educate people on exactly what's going on, and for y'all to go out and tie all of this to government spending is huge. People have got to understand that's what it is.
Yeah, it's number one, it's going to be fun to just go out there and help people. Number two, there is the education piece, and we'll have more information on that later. You can probably check it out on all of our Facebook page.
Y'all are going to have a line down the road. You'll probably get some media on that because you're going to create a traffic hazard.
We're hoping to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, somebody, those kinds of things, it's always amazing to me. You'll see, you know, food banks or something, and this is really, it's very sad, but it's true. A food bank will give out $20 worth of food in a basket. People will leave their house at 3 a.m. to get in line, and they'll wait for 6 hours to get a free $20, $25 basket or bag of food.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that doesn't make any economic sense. I think I could do something better with 6 hours. But people need this. I mean, anything that where they think they can get a break somewhere, they will flock to. Y'all are going to see a ton of people.
Oh, yeah. We're hoping to.
Yeah. Gas prices are very interesting. You know, I will sometimes pass a gas station because I know I can go or I've got a discount card or something and I can save 10 cents a gallon. Maybe I need 10 gallons. That's a dollar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll go to a restaurant and I'll just look at something and I'll go, oh, hell yeah, I'll have the ribeye. And let me get that. I've never tried that wine before. Let me get that. But I will travel somewhere else to save a dollar on gasoline.
I use my Kroger card any chance I get.
Yes, absolutely. There's gas out here in Florida that's a little more expensive than over there. So I'll go and I'll pump like $5. I'll say, I can just get myself back to the Kroger in Ridgeland where I can get to the Kroger gas station. And when you stop and think about it, you save $3.
Yeah.
You know, by the time you pump all this stuff. But everybody is looking for a break. We're looking for any relief we can find anywhere. That's going to be an interesting event. What you say that's on the 28th of June?
Yeah, and we'll have more information on that later.
Okay. All right. Great. All right. We're talking to Stone Clanton, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around. We'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYEB. We're talking to Stone Clanton, Americans for Prosperity. You got an event coming up this Saturday. Tell people why they should show up.
Yes, this Saturday, June 11th. It's going to be at 9 a.m. at our original office. And then we'll have the address and everything on here. I can give my contact info off. But basically, this is for people who have been sitting on the sidelines, watching their country, watching Mississippi, after they've been watching the news and reading the papers in their communities. It's just, it's going to pot, and they don't exactly know how to get involved. we want to help those people get involved.
Yeah.
And this boot camp is going to be great because it's so specialized and customized, especially for Mississippi and the issues that we have going on right now. And really, these aren't partisan issues.
They shouldn't be.
They're not. They're just basic issues that will help everyone. It's not a right or left thing. It's just hey.
Common sense.
Yes, yeah, common sense. So we're going to break the class down into five areas. The first one is going to be AFP Mississippi's vision for a better state. And this is just going to kind of consist of our core principles that we value both as a community, as an organization. And some of those is just empowering people to realize their unique potential because everybody's different. They're individuals. Equal rights and respecting the dignity of every person, openness to new ideas, people, goods, services, and people succeeding by helping others improve their lives, mutual benefit. Just free enterprise.
Yeah.
That's all it is. The next session is going to be on health care, and it's going to give people the best knowledge on why our health care system isn't working in the country. And it's not because of capitalism. It's not because of the free market or free enterprise. And the solution isn't more big government. That's the problem. It is the government.
Yes.
That's the problem. And this is all going to be about deregulation and people-based solutions to these problems. This is going to be about the personal option, whether it be scope of practice, price transparency.
What is personal option? I've heard y'all use that term before.
Yeah, that's kind of a term that we use. It's sort of an ideas of different policies that we'd like to implement over the years. And you'll find more about it at the class.
Yeah, right.
But basically some examples.
Healthcare is a disaster.
It is.
It is a disaster.
It is, and it's not working, and it's usually because of the government.
Yes, it's always because of the government.
And we can help by implementing this personal option. Like I said, the examples are scope of practice, letting nurses operate under their full potential that they've been trained to do, price transparency, telehealth, and then, of course, the devil that is certificate of need, which is a planned economy, a cronyism, just a monopoly between big corporate hospitals and the government. It's socialism in Mississippi, basically.
Yeah. Well, what people who don't know, certificate of need is that nobody can open a new hospital unless all of the people they're going to open up to compete against agree to allow
basically
them in, essentially.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's
the hospitals have got to say, okay, yeah, I guess we should use another hospital, and they're admitting to allowing a competitor in, and they're just not doing that.
Yeah, an example we always like to use is if there's a Pizza Hut down the road and then a Papa John's wants to open up a block away, they have to basically get the state of Mississippi and Pizza Hut's permission to even open up and open up a free business that they should be able to operate under.
And this is a time where we've just been through a couple of years where they told us, oh, we just don't have enough beds here, not enough beds there, we can't handle this, we can't handle that.
It's because of certificate of need.
Yeah, we're stretched to the limits here. Be kind to your healthcare workers. They're working, you know, 90-hour weeks. Well, maybe they wouldn't be if you had more places for people to go.
Yeah. So that's the second session. And the third session is going to be all about economic freedom, which is why AFP was originally started, between the overtaxation and the overregulation with businesses. And specifically, we're going to teach about regulatory sandboxes and home-based businesses. And if people don't know what regulatory sandboxes are, they're sort of like those special economic zones we were talking about earlier off the air. And it's so if an industry or a technology is wanting to start up and there's no actual law or regulation around that, this will allow temporary exemptions from prohibitive regulations from the state to just
let somebody try something.
Yeah, just try something
just
and see how it
new.
Works. And and then that will allow the state, if needed, to implement an informed regulatory set. But and then the home-based business piece is just, you know, your cottage food stuff and that kind of stuff, and just protecting people's right to open up a business in their home, a free enterprise. Some of the most successful businesses have opened up in homes and garages. Look at Microsoft, Harley Davidson, Amazon, you know.
Yeah.
It's insane, but
well, and it gives people, I mean, at a time right now where people are struggling, if we head into a recession, more people are going to need to try to just create incomes for themselves. They probably won't. Yeah. In every recession, you have a lot of people trying to do side hustles, and people need the ability to do it. You know, Ridgeland, I believe. This just struck me. Ridgeland stops people from doing Airbnb now. They outlaw Airbnbs in Ridgeland
didn't know that.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
They just decided. I mean, this is just one of those things where I'm sure that some busybody in the government, I am 99% sure I'm right about this, but this has happened around the country. If I'm almost positive Ridgeland has done this. Well, for the property values, we don't want strangers coming in and staying there. It's more stable for our neighborhoods if it's just a residence. Okay. Some places, homeowners won't allow you to rent your house out, that kind of thing. But an Airbnb, it really strikes me interesting because if you want to rent out an Airbnb, you make it as nice as possible. You really maintain the property.
Yeah.
The people that are coming to stay with you have got money, and they also put deposits down, so they've got to treat it well. It's not like you're having, some drug-fueled party or something. You know what? It's just weird. But it is just these little governments around the state here or across the state just stepping on the way of people just making some money with what they own, just being creative and going out and making some money. And the government steps on this stuff all the time.
No, that is crazy. I'm glad you let me know about that because it's just so – that's interesting.
Yeah.
Just because, I told you I just got back from New York. You don't have Airbnbs in New York or stuff like that either because of the hotel unions.
The
lobby. It's sort of like the Ubers and the Lyfts because of the taxi unions. But no,
right.
I didn't know about that in Ridgeland.
Yeah.
So the third PI session, and what a PI is a priority initiative. Those are just things we're focusing on, is educational freedom. And this one is pretty self-explanatory. Education isn't a one-size-fits-all thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes people like to use the word school choice. And example I like to give sometimes is me and my two brothers. There's three boys in my family, and I was always a more history, social science, politics, government, that always interested me. Mason, the middle brother, he is more technical, science-based. He's going into the X-ray tech, that type of stuff. And then the youngest one, Ridge, he likes baseball, girls, and trucks. But he's still in high school. But anyway, the fact of the matter is that education does not fit all. And there's multiple different types of foundational education that we can focus on. It's not just public schools, private schools, charter schools, and magnet schools. There's micro schools, there's church schools, there's all these different innovative
homeschools.
All these different innovative ways to do things, and it's time that parents and kids have that choice of freedom to see. And I get the whole classical education thing, and it's pretty cool, the whole Jeffersonian, whatever, but that doesn't always necessarily work for everyone long term, But anyway,
we've had a pretty large failure of the education system here. The charts showing where we rank in the world proves that.
Yeah, yeah. And then finally, that session five is, you've heard us talk about it a lot, is working with anyone to do right, no one to do wrong. It's a Frederick Douglass quote. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that will do that. We will work with anyone to make America, Mississippi more free and prosperous. And if you can't civilly sit down with an elected official or someone you either may or may not agree or disagree with and find one thing to work with them on, that there's bigger issues there, but that's what that session is going to be about. But
I'm pretty alone in conservative talk radio and here on this station where I'm not somebody who says every Democrat is a demon rat.
Right.
I mean, Democrats and liberals have been on the right side of a lot of issues. Now, recently they've lost their minds. They used to be anti-war, and now they're full-on war with Russia. It's bizarre to see. But, the left and I would imagine I would talk to a lot of my friends on the left, and there's certainly things that the right has been, been better on. This idea that you can't reach out and work with somebody that you might disagree with on a ton of different things. When you do agree on something, just doesn't make any sense to me,
Yeah. So, that's going to be the class. And again, this is for people, like I said, that have been sitting on the sidelines and they're sick and tired of watching their country and state go to pot. And they want to make a difference. And we need patriots out there that are actually doing that. So, and we want to help them do that. And
I think one of the best things about the class that I attended with y'all and the functions that I've gone to, you meet some awesome people.
You do.
You meet some people who are like-minded in the state that you would never, ever meet any other way. Mm-hmm. And there's so many times, a lot of us are in families. I'm so totally different than my family about political stuff. So I've got nobody to really chat with about
you know, I'm a very radical freedom lover. Nobody else in my family is, so I can't get anything there. And within my friends, you know, it's like everybody's friends. Some are apathetic. Some are Kool-Aid drinking Republicans. Some may be Kool-Aid drinking Democrats. I don't necessarily, you know, we can debate and have a great time. We just avoid. But you don't always have a lot of fellow travelers when you want to kind of be part of the freedom movement and try to move things forward. So you can go to this place and meet a bunch of strangers you never would have met before,
yeah,
and connect with people that actually do kind of feel like you do about some stuff.
Yeah,
I think that's important.
Yeah, that the event that I was that when I was still there, I was just an activist before I come on full time with AFP. That's I met some great people there that I still talk to today,
yeah,
about
absolutely.
Different every week,
right.
You know, if not more than once a week, and I think it's important and to have that network and to build those coalitions. I think that was the great thing about the Tea Party movement years ago, was it wasn't necessarily just this one giant organized thing where you have top-down stuff. It's bottom-up solutions,
yeah,
with all these different groups working together.
It should have been Tea Party and Occupy should have got, you know, talking about working with somebody to do good. The Tea Party and Occupy had some of the same beefs.
They did.
They really had a lot in
they
common.
Did.
But the Occupy wanted the government to come in and fix it, and the Tea Party, I agreed with much more. They wanted the government out of this stuff and no bailouts and stuff. But I always thought, oh, there's. But what happened with those movements? The Democrats came in and put their arm around Occupy and said, mm-hmm, oh, we just love what you're saying. Come on in. Let's talk about it. And the Occupy just got absorbed into the blob.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Tea Party, the Republicans came and said, hey, you got some great points there, champ. Come on back to the Republican Party and let's talk about them. And the Tea Party went in with the Republicans and it just,
yep,
got absorbed into that blob and there's nothing left. So
yeah.
I think we got to take another swing at this
this
protest movement.
Hey, I think we got a good shot at that.
Yeah. All right. We're talking to Stone Clanton, Americans for Prosperity. One more segment when we come back. Stick around.
Citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment here. We're talking to Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. Stone, where can everybody find y'all's stuff? Where are you online?
Yeah, so we're on Facebook, Americans for Prosperity Mississippi, or just AFPMS. And then you can always reach out to me at 601-300-9536, 601-300-9536. And then my email is sclanton@afphq.org, sclanton@afphq.org. But any way that I can ever be of assistance to anybody that wants to get involved, whether that be trying to figure out who their legislator is and trying to get in contact with them, if there's an issue that they're passionate about, we want to work with them.
Yeah. Y'all are all over the state too, aren't you? You do a lot of traveling with what you're doing?
Yeah, I basically cover from Meridian to Vicksburg, in that,
yeah,
all the central area. I live in Clinton, so just about 15-20 minutes away from here. But this work over the central area, and then we're planning on expanding once again into northern part of the region, especially that Oxford area, and then of course the coast and Pine Belt region.
Yeah, yeah. So Starla and Kate are up in Washington D.C. in the belly of the beast right now.
They are in the swamp.
Yeah.
So they should be coming back today, late tonight, and then probably sleep in a little bit tomorrow to get pumped up and ready for this Saturday for the event.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's 2 days away. They
do
need to get home
and
get some rest.
Yeah, they're going to be tired.
Yeah, they're not going to have a day off on Saturday. So, okay, that's this Saturday at your Ridgeland office in the Woodlands Office Park over there right off of County Line Road.
Yes, yes. And if once again, if you're interested, you can always feel free to reach out to me. Plus, all the information is on Facebook about that. But yeah,
do they need to register for that or just
show
up?
It would definitely be helpful. Of course, you can always just text me and tell me that you're coming, but it would be helpful to RSVP just so we can figure out the food situation.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, great. And you just took a travel too. You said you went up to New York.
I did. I mean, I've been traveling all over. I went up to the Big Apple, enjoyed it. Big Yankee fans, my family are. And I was telling you earlier, I didn't realize you were from New York, but New Yorkers are not mean. Sometimes it's just the unfriendliness because it's the lack of trust up there. But we had a great time. Everybody was super kind up there.
You said talking to you off air, you said the economy was kind of bustling up there.
I've got
the vibe that they just crushed New York.
It is. I thought it was going to be still pretty chaotic. I thought everybody was going to be wearing a mask. But out of about 1 out of 10 people, only about 2 people were wearing masks and no indoor policies. But I mean, it was bustling. I mean, the business was there. Yeah. So hopefully
streets
they come back
crowded, strong.
Streets
crowded. Everybody walking yeah. around like you see in typical New York movies and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Subways crowded. Streets are crowded. Buses crowded. Everything. I mean, it looked like New York City from the movies.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's great. It was very interesting. I remember when COVID first started, and I was reading headlines like in January, maybe early February of 2020. And I was saying, I was seeing all these headlines about China locking stuff down, and there were pictures of that. And I was floored by it. And I just kept saying, can you even imagine? I mean, at the time, China had locked down something like 250 million people for this COVID thing. And I was so clueless as to how this was going to play out. And I said, can you even imagine if they tried to lock down like New York City? 6 months later, they were showing footage from New York City. It's just basically streets where, you know, normally you just, cars honking, traffic jams, people zigzagging between cars and filling up the streets. And suddenly there were these empty roads and boarded up businesses. It just looked like a ghost town, something from one of these, you know, Armageddon movies. Pretty amazing. But that's impressive that it's bounced back. I don't even know how it did it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I get the only thing I can think is mainly the tourism stuff, you know. And that's where we were mainly at, hitting those highlights, Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty, Yankee Stadium, that kind of stuff, 30 Rock. And, I mean, I think that's the kind of stuff that really keeps them busy, in Times Square.
Well, like if they're letting people eat there, and you don't need a vaccine passport for anything, but I think they were at the verge of killing even the tourist industry because they made it would have been horrible to be a tourist there six months ago.
We never got asked for any vaccine passports.
Yeah, not good.
So, I mean, it was a good trip, though.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly not a fan of the politics in New York City or New York State or anything, but... Yeah, it's a thriving place, brings people some attention around the world. It's certainly a money center, so I don't know. I want to see every city succeed in this country.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, great. Well, all right, this weekend on the 11th?
The 11th, this Saturday.
9 o'clock, AFP. Check them out on Facebook, Americans for Prosperity, Mississippi. That's all the time we got. Thanks, Stone.
Thank you so much.
Right, no bye-bye. Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.